I'm Franco Chamakili, I'm a policy associate at the Asian Pacific Islander American Health Forum. We're a national nonprofit with our headquarters in San Francisco and our policy office in Washington, D.C., where I'm based. Our mission is to mobilize communities, influence policy, and strengthen community-based organizations in Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander communities here in the U.S. and its jurisdictions. Our policy priorities are health access, health quality, and research and data, and then health equity. Before I begin, I just really want to say thanks to APHA for recognizing the importance of this issue. I really believe this topic epitomizes the theme of the conference this far, as well as highlights health as a human right. And sorry, I was being goofy with my audacity of health equity. But
I like
there are no disclosures. So I would like to, my main objective today is to present this complex issue in a digestible way by first giving you a historical background, followed by key policy changes that have impacted the health of these people, and then finally suggest a simple and just way to provide some basic access to much needed care. And I'm going to do this in hopefully less than 15 minutes with one graph.
Wow.
So historical background. Can I just get a, just so I know where everybody's knowledge is on this, raise your hand if you know what a COFA migrant is. Okay. How about Micronesia? Okay. How about the Pacific Ocean? Okay, good. All right, better. That's great. So I'll help you out if you don't know. So Oceania is a term used to describe the region of the Pacific with its culturally and ethnically distinct regions of Polynesia, Melanesia, and Micronesia. Sometimes Oceania refers to Australia, New Zealand, Papua New Guinea, and then the ocean. But for our cases, we're just going to focus on the regions that are the region that is Micronesia. The Pacific as a whole has a long history of colonization from European and even some Asian countries. And specifically with Micronesia, we had Spain, and then Germany bought it from Spain, and then it was taken away from Germany and given to Japan. And then from Japan, it was given to the United States. So, you know, over time, these islands have been given, bought, sold, without any kind of consideration to the people that were actually on the islands, you know, and their territorial claim to the land. So after World War II, Japan was stripped of its administrative duties in the region. And then the United Nations formed what is known as the Trust Territory of the Pacific, and then placed that administrative power, that administrative authority, with the United States. And the United States then looked over it and really capitalized on this opportunity for economic benefit and also military benefit. And because it was so remote and isolated, they decided to detonate 105 nuclear bombs. From 1947 to 1962, the United States basically uprooted people from their native land and then placed them on islands that could not sustain them. So some people starved to death because they put them on islands where you couldn't grow food. And realizing that they would never return back to their home island, they placed them on other islands that were really densely populated. Now, keep in mind that Micronesians had been, you know, dealing with this delicate balance with their ecology for hundreds of, actually thousands of years, and to then have somebody come in and then move them to places where they knew that life wasn't sustainable, it's a big deal. And because their health was compromised in this way, it is a human rights violation. I just want to paint a picture, just give you an idea of. So the bombs in Nagasaki and Hiroshima, we know what kind of damage they did. They were 31 kilotons, okay? The explosive energy from total, from all the 105 nuclear bombs, is 210,000 kilotons. That's a lot of kilotons. So even if you divided that number from 105, you're still looking at a bomb that's 2,000 kilotons. Now, if 31 kilotons can just destroy cities like Nagasaki and Hiroshima, imagine what that can do. Anyways, so 1962 comes along. It's not like the United States didn't want to do nuclear testing any longer. It was that they had a nuclear test ban in the international realm, so they stopped. And basically, 1979 comes, the Republic of Marshall Islands is formed, and they become independent, along with the Federated States of Micronesia and the Republic of Palau. And they were all former trust territories of the Pacific. However, the United States had put billions of dollars in infrastructure into these islands and for military bases, and they weren't going to give up so easily, so what they did was they created this Compact of Free Association with these islands. So the U.S. Associated Pacific today looks kind of like this. We have U.S. territories, Guam, American Samoa, and the Commonwealth of Northern Mariana Islands. Now, the Commonwealth of the Northern Mariana Islands was also part of the Trust Territories of the Pacific, but they didn't go into independence. They decided to become a Commonwealth, and they have a unique situation with the United States, but it's still considered a territory. And then we have the Freely Associated States, which are independent nations now, but they do have this special relationship with the U.S., and that's what makes them freely associated. So from the Trust Territory of the Pacific to the Compact of Free Association. This association, so in this agreement, there are economic provisions for, with the United States and these three independent nations, RMI, FSM, and Palau. Sorry, I'm going to use acronyms now. and these economic provisions include grants that provide these islands money for education, public infrastructure, health, and other administrative expenditures. And the military provision basically says that the United States can continue to lease land from these islands and do what they would like. So there is still ballistic missile tests on the islands where they we have bases. And, I mean, you think about it, we have a really good strategic position in the Pacific now because of these islands. And the immigration provision is where we have this creation of COFA migrants. Now, COFA migrants basically is the Compact of Free Association migrants. So they are citizens from RMI, FSM, and Palau who are able to come to the United States, work here, live here, go to school with no visa, and go back and forth as they please. And we say COFA migrants when they're in the United States to distinguish the citizens when they're actually in their home countries. So when they're here, they're COFA migrants when they're in U.S. soil. And then this compact was signed or ratified by Congress in 1986. And then it was amended in 2003, but I'll come back to that. So I just want to paint a picture of what health looks like in the freely associated states so we understand why a COFA migrant would want to come here, right? Reality is that these folks are suffering in their homeland, mainly because of the environmental degradation and the different social determinants that have determined their health status today. This is just a graph to show you the percentage of GDP that these countries spend on health. And as you can see, FSM, RMI, and Palau spend a large portion of their GDP to health expenditures, almost as much as the United States. And this is the reason why. They have extremely high rates of diabetes. Diabetes mainly because, one, their island's really populated. They don't get a lot of the, I mean, you think of a Pacific island, you think, oh, just get a coconut and a banana and you'll be fine. But these folks can't actually grow food on their islands anymore because of, a lot of it is because of the nuclear fallout. And then they also rely on food imports that are high in fat and in preservatives. And then in the FSM in Micronesia, in the Federated States of Micronesia, cancer is the number three leading cause of death. And we wonder why. Excuse me one second here. So I just want us to, I'm going to start to talk about these COFA migrants and some of the key policies that have affected their health status here in the United States. But I think this is where we start to think globally and now act locally. And due to the compact immigration provisions, as well as the trust territory legacy, there are 56,000 COFA migrants in the United States. And in 2008, the Republic of the Marshall Islands had the highest contributing force. So they had the highest per capita contribution to the armed services. So that means we recruited heavily there and they all joined. So they serve our country in the military and as well as make up a large portion of our blue collar labor in a lot of our states. In 1996, the Personal Responsibility and Work Opportunity Reconciliation Act, also known as welfare reform, for whatever reason, stripped COFA migrants of their federal benefits for Medicaid. Now, a lot of people say this was an oversight because they created a qualified and not qualified immigrant category. But as you know, these folks are not immigrants. But they were classified as not qualified, excluding them from Medicaid. So many of these people that were getting benefits one day went to the doctor and said, no, you don't get this benefit anymore. A few other policies that have kind of failed access to COFA migrants are the Reauthorization Act for Children's Health Insurance Program. It allowed governors to decide whether or not they wanted to provide medical benefits for undocumented immigrants and other categories of people. From what I've read, only two states that have a large portion of COFA migrants in it provide any kind of support to for prenatal care or even children that are qualified as COFA migrants. Hawaii MedQuest is also kind of an injustice in itself. Just briefly, I'll talk about this. So Hawaii MedQuest is a great program, and it provided care to these COFA migrants, much like Medicaid, right? Full Medicaid. But in 2010, it was taken away from them, and they created Basic Health Hawaii, which was a limited health plan that severely cut and reduced the amount of office visits or even care that these folks could get. So their plan changed and they realized, somebody goes to the hospital and they find out that they've used all their doctor visits within a week because they were on dialysis and they didn't realize that. So right now this is being contested in a Ninth Circuit court in Hawaii that you can't create a specific health program based on somebody's ethnicity or race, and it's still waiting for a decision. There's also been 16 legislative attempts to restore Medicaid since 2001. They've been mainly introduced by members of Congress from Hawaii or Guam. The reason for this being is it's expensive for these states to continue to provide help. It is expensive. And a lot of that burden falls on community clinics. The only just thing and the only wise thing would be to restore Medicaid for these folks. I'll talk a little bit about what APIHF is doing legislatively or assisting a little later. So in 2003, the compact was amended to include compact impact funds. Now, this was monies given to states and U.S. jurisdictions or territories that have been impacted by the increase in immigration from these COFA migrant nations, or the FAS. They were given $210 million over 20 years, so they would get $30 million a year to split among the four of them over 20 years to provide for some of the costs that COFA migrants would have on the state. So for education, public health, housing, all of that money was supposed to help kind of alleviate the burden. Now, I ask you, there's political will to give money to these states for these programs, but there wasn't political will to just give these folks Medicaid restoration, which is really disheartening because it just makes so much sense. However, there are some options for COFA migrants under the Affordable Care Act. They can participate in they fall under the individual mandate, so they can participate in the marketplace. However, they don't get Medicaid if they don't make enough money, but they do get the advanced premium tax credit. However, we've seen that sometimes that's also not enough, so they can also opt out. They can purchase insurance, and a lot of them, surprisingly, have insurance through their employers, but a lot of them also don't have insurance through their employers that provide for their spouse or their dependents. They're eligible for emergency Medicaid, so dialysis, you know, but that doesn't really treat the problem. That's not prevention. That doesn't help them manage their diabetes at all. And then Medicare, if they can prove that they worked in the United States for 10 years. So APIHF has been working legislatively with members of Congress and other community-based organizations to really find ways to restore Medicaid through the House and the Senate, and we were able to get it attached to the Comprehensive Immigration Reform in the Senate, and then recently it was introduced in the House, and that passed, and then it was recently introduced in the House, where it sits today. So we're hopeful that, you know, now's the time for Medicaid restoration for COFA migrants. But really, the United States needs to fulfill its obligation. COFA migrants pay into the system. They are excluded from through sales tax, income tax, even property tax. The majority of COFA migrants work blue-collar jobs with incomes that would not qualify for Medicaid, that would qualify for Medicaid, sorry. And given what the United States has done to the islands and where they're coming from and the productive lives they live when they come to the United States, it does make sense. And then I think the other thing that doesn't really make sense is, although lawfully present, COFA migrants receive less access than other legally residing immigrants. So you might be familiar with the 5-year bar. That doesn't matter. For COFA migrants, they could be here for 25 years and still not be able to take advantage of this benefit. Now, Medicaid isn't a silver bullet, but it is something, and it would alleviate a lot of the inequity that these folks experience when they come to the United States seeking care that they can't get in their home. So thank you. Sorry, these are just some resources.